This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we're talking about homeopathy. Homeopathy, controversial because many in conventional medicine think it's the, basically quackery, that there's nothing to it, that there's no scientific basis for how it could possibly work, and that there's no studies that really support its efficacy. But our guest today, Dana Ullman, is the founder and director of the Homeopathic Education Service, which, by the way, you can find it at homeopathic.com. Is that correct, Dana?
Absolutely right. You got it.
And frequently writes on the subject of homeopathy. And so a couple of things about homeopathy. So homeopathy is based on the notion of just very infinitesimal amounts of usually natural substances. Some of the homeopathic remedies may contain toxic things like belladonna, mercury, arsenic even. Arsenicum album is, from my recollection in studying homeopathy many years ago, is one of the go-to remedies in homeopathy. So how do we know that, when you take a homeopathic drops, or when you take a homeopathic little, one of those little tiny pills, that A, there's something there that are really, it's more than just a placebo, and B, that you're not getting something dangerous or harmful.
Right. Well, tell you what, first of all, what I'd like to do is convey to you what I consider really compelling evidence.
Sure.
That homeopathic medicines are real medicines, have real effects, and that there's a scientific basis to it. There's a journal published by the American Chemistry Society. Needless to say, this is not any alternative journal. It's a journal that's called Langmuir, and it specializes in an area of science called material sciences. Material sciences is a blend of chemistry, physics, and engineering, and they test all types of different things for how different modern technologies work. And one of the areas in this is in pharmacy, they look at storage of drugs. And as you know, drugs are made and stored in glass and plastic and various other ingredients. And they find that in homeopathy, we always made our medicines in glass. Because if you made them in a metal, that metal would leach into the water and it would contaminate the medicine. Mm-hmm. We assumed that glass was inert, but guess what? It isn't. And conventional scientific research that's not involved with homeopathy at all finds that when you use what's called a double distilled water, which is also the type of water that we use, it's what's called pharmaceutical grade water. And they distill it once and they distill it again to be as pure as possible. But when you use this type of water in glass and you shake it vigorously like they do in homeopathy, or stir it vigorously.
I think the term is succussion.
Succussion? Yeah. You're right. They find that 6 parts per million of silica fragments fall off the glass walls in super nano-sized amounts. Mm-hmm. So a little silica floating in the water, and because of the vigorous shaking, the bubbles and the nanobubbles, that's the technical word, these nano-sized bubbles, bring oxygen down into the water, and it increases the water pressure substantially, so that whatever substance you're making into a medicine will be pushed into the silica fragments that are floating in the water. Then when you dump out 99% of the water, a lot of the fragments just cling to the glass walls. So this scientific journal published by the American Chemistry Society found that no matter how many times you did these dilutions with the shaking in between, using three different types of spectroscopy, they found nanoparticles of each of the original substances. And what's surprising, they found them in significant number to resemble the nano doses that our hormones and cell signaling systems of our body are known to operate.
So that's actually an important point, is that when we talk about the effects of, thyroid releasing hormone, you know, something directly from the pituitary.
Or testosterone.
But more so, I think the ones that, that are the triggers for the glands, because the glands are a little bigger, they actually pump out a little more, like our ovaries and testes and adrenals pump out maybe more material amounts of hormones, but it takes a very, very, very tiny amount, infinitesimal amount of triggering to get those organs to produce optimally. So that I think that certainly underlines the basis for believing that just tiny, tiny amounts of certain substances can have a profound effect.
And more important here, by the way, this verifies that when I coined the word nanopharmacology back in 2003, and we published a book by a professor of pathology that used that term nanopharmacology in its subtitle. And then in 2006, I published an article in a very respected scientific journal where I said, I called it, let's have a serious discussion on homeopathy and nanopharmacology. And that was the first time that word, nanopharmacology, was used in a major scientific journal, by the way, just as early as 2006. But this verifies that homeopathic medicines are a type of nanopharmacology, and that when skeptics say that there's nothing in homeopathic medicines, that is evidence that they are misinforming the public and lying, because they know about this research. I've had discussions with each of the leading skeptics, and they now say that homeopathic medicines are contaminated with the ingredient that we put on the label.
Contaminated. Wow. Well, okay.
That is such bad faith of an understanding what's going on.
And so, to the other point, are there any concerns about toxicity? I know that, again, we're talking about the principle of opposites. So there's terrible symptoms that people experience when they get a poisonous dose of arsenic.
Sure.
But sometimes certain terrible symptoms can be reversed or neutralized by an infinitesimal dose. But is there, clarify for our audience, is there a concern that, you know, these substances are now the subject of a great deal of concern, toxicity of mercury and arsenic, and, you know, even lead is actually one of the maybe lesser used homeopathic remedies, plumbum.
We use arsenic, absolutely. In fact, we also use different bacteria made from what we call nosodes.
Right.
And so there's homeopathic doses of gonorrhea or syphilis.
Tuberculinum is even one.
Yeah.
Right.
But here's the deal. Yep. The FDA has a strict guideline around what they define to be toxic doses.
Yep.
So it's not just that a substance is toxic, it's the dose of the substance that's toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot make a homeopathic medicine of a snake venom and sell it in a mother tincture. That's too deadly.
Exactly.
So they allow certain homeopathic doses of different venoms, as long as they're diluted 1 to 10, 8 times.
So it's sort of like some of these substances are kind of like the national debt in terms of the dilution, right? You know, they're millions or even billions of times. So, you know, and the talk about the designations, because something that's 10X or some things are 10D, I forget what the nomenclature means. What does that mean?
Okay, so X is a Roman numeral for 10.
Mm-hmm.
And C is a Roman numeral for a centesimal or 100.
Right.
So X means that a substance was diluted 1 to 10, 6 times or 12 times or 30 times, whatever that number is before the X.
Okay.
Now the letter D.
So a 10X would be, you would dilute it and succuss it 1/10, 1/10, 1/10, 10 times. So that's quite a lot of decimal points.
With 40 succussions in between each dilution. That's right.
So that, and actually, from my recollection, a 10x is a fairly common dosage of a homeopathic remedy. And some are even, you know, C.
They're usually the gradation is 6, 12, 30, and then 200, and then 1,000, 10,000, 50,000, 100,000, and 500,000.
Okay. So
and the more a substance is potentized,
right,
the longer it acts, the deeper it acts, and the less doses are needed.
Okay.
Now let me tell you the latest thinking about how and why the smaller the dose, the more powerful the effect.
Can I say something first? Because, you know,
yes,
this any you know, smart advanced placement high school kid will tell you about something called Avogadro's number. Avogadro's number is the number of molecules in a mole of something, and whatever the substance is. The number of molecules is, I don't know, 10 to the 23rd or something like that, particles. So there's literally billions and trillions of particles in a mole of whatever substance. And so when you get dilutions that mathematically are below that threshold, some would argue that there ain't nothing there, that there's no material substance present. So take it from there, Dana.
Yeah.
I know you have an answer,
so
but I'm
hitting
you with my best shots.
No. I'll educate you so you don't ask that question again, and you'll now know.
Okay.
But anyone that brings up Avogadro's number is simply showing that they haven't been listening to what I just said.
Oh, okay.
And the reason I say that is that the making of the medicines in these glass bottles with this double distilled water and with this vigorous succussion, and this, where in the Avogadro's number does it account for the silica fragments floating in the water? Does it account for the nanobubbles creating increased water pressure? And that when you dump out the water, that the silica fragments cling to the glass walls. That's not a part of Avogadro's number. So Avogadro's number is a great mathematical number. But in biology, biology is more complex. It doesn't account for these other real variables. So the bottom line is that no matter how many times you dilute a homeopathic medicine, they will find nanoparticles of the original thing. And here's the interesting part. Because that substance now has been linked up with the silica fragment, and the more you dilute it, that fragment probably gets broken up many times in that process of diluting and shaking. That enables it to go through the blood-brain barrier and into deeper recesses of our brain more easily than larger complex molecules. Because every cell of our body has that cellular membrane. And the membrane is not a wall. It's a membrane that will let certain things in and not let other things in.
Right.
And when it's a large molecule, that membrane locks down and says, you're a foreign substance. We're not letting you in. But you get to such small doses, there's no alarms that go off. And then once it's inside the brain, once it's inside the cell, there's greater sensitivity. And the body then says, wait a minute, we've been infiltrated with arsenic. So how do we get rid of arsenic? Well, what a coincidence. The person's symptoms, the reason why arsenic was prescribed is it matched the symptoms of the sick person. So then a healing process is created, an immunological catalyst is augmented. And that's how and why nano-sized doses can penetrate membranes and blood-brain barriers and elicit a healing response.
So, Dana, can you enumerate some of the most promising studies that suggest that this is more than a placebo effect? And by the way, the placebo effect's not to be ignored. And I think that many medications, many even over-the-counter medications, are so harmful to adults and kids that someone who has a homeopathic medicine kit at home and deals with minor health problems like a fever or a minor sprain with a homeopathic remedy is probably, even if it's even if it's inefficacious, I know you would never say it's inefficacious, but even if it's inefficacious, it's preferable. It's like a holding pattern to allow a therapeutic intervention, which may have at least a healing aspect to it, because the psychology of healing is important as well, and defer the use of potentially harmful medication, you know, Advil, Tylenol, you know, cough medicines, etc., many of which are, you know, useless or harmful.
Wait, well, so what was your question in that?
Well, so it was more of a statement. What I'm saying is, there's a placebo component to treatment.
Oh, yeah.
But let's get beyond the placebo, because we need to look at double-blind placebo-controlled trials.
Let's talk about these trials. There was a journal published in a journal called Chest, which is the most respected journal around respiratory medicine. And the number three cause of death in America is called COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which includes emphysema and chronic bronchitis. This is a very serious illness. And in the in a hospital in Vienna that's connected to the Vienna School of Medicine, a double-blind and placebo-controlled study was published on people with COPD. Half of them were given a placebo, and half of them were given one homeopathic medicine that wasn't even individualized to them. But these researchers...
Which is, by the way, just let me interject, which is one of the reasons why it's very hard to do homeopathic research.
That's
because,
right.
Like, one person with a cough might get a completely different remedy than another person with a cough based on their personal characteristics. And, you know, there's a whole lot of history taking that goes... It's not like,
right.
Oh, you got a cough, boom, take codeine. Next.
Right.
You know, it's not like that.
So what they did, though, is that these clinicians found that a large percentage of their patients with COPD were responding to this very common homeopathic medicine that's known to create this bronchial and tracheal secretion or mucus that's of a very stringy nature, like a mozzarella cheese.
Hmm.
And so they gave this medicine to half of the patients, and it had such a dramatic effect that the p-value, which was the probability of this particular remedy having this effect just by happenstance, was at a p-value 0.0004.
Wow.
Which means that this is not just significantly significant, but yeah, substantially significant.
Much better than many drug studies, because they think they'll accept the p-value of 0.01. You know, 0.01
is every drug study.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Substantially more. And what's so great is that people don't even have to be a practicing homeopath to be able to use this.
Mm-hmm.
And
what is it, by the way? I mean,
it sounds
intriguing. What is that homeopathic remedy, by the way?
It's a drug called Calibic.
Calibic, okay, which is actually the mineral salts. That's the...
No. It's not one of the mineral salts.
Oh.
There's different mineral, Calimir, Califos, and Calisalt.
Okay. Right.
This is a different potassium salt.
Okay.
That's called Calibichromicum is the full name.
Okay.
Calibic is the...
I thought it was the like, not a... Is the name Schussler? Schussler salts? That's a different thing.
Yes, and
that's
that is a different thing.
Okay.
But Calibic is one of the leading remedies for not just COPD, but actually people that might have a cold with a very stringy nasal discharge.
Yeah.
So they blow their nose and, you know, all I can say is use the word mozzarella cheese and you can get the
visual. I feel like I'm in a time travel, because this is the kind of stuff that I studied like 35, 40 years ago. You know, even before I went to medical school, I was into homeopathy and studying it. So, yeah, amazing.
So that's one study. Now, there's another study that was published in a journal called Rheumatology, which is published by the British Rheumatological Society, on a condition called fibromyalgia.
Yep.
Now, fibromyalgia is this, it's a newly defined disease syndrome that may have some musculoskeletal symptoms, along with some sleep disturbances, and even certain other physical and emotional symptoms. And they found that when patients given the homeopathic medicine, in this case, what they had is two MD homeopaths prescribed for patients. And they didn't know it. They didn't know which patients were given the real remedy. And it was an individually selected remedy. And which patients were given a placebo. But what they also did is they hooked them up to EEG monitors and they read their brain waves. Mm-hmm. And the first dose was not given in pill form. It was given in liquid form where the patients just smelled the liquid. Hmm. And just the smelling of the alcohol liquid influenced the brain waves, and they can differentiate out those patients that were given the remedy, the correct homeopathic medicine, and those that were given a placebo. So not only did this study show that a homeopathic medicine had a clinically beneficial effect on patients with fibromyalgia, but they found objective brain wave measurements differences between those given a placebo and those given the homeopathic medicine.
So it sounds like the full gamut of medical conditions are amenable to homeopathy. I think perhaps, you know, unless we're talking about a severed limb or something like that, which requires a mechanical intervention.
Yes and no. You see, with many of these more complex chronic diseases, a homeopath doesn't just give one remedy. It gives one remedy 1 month and a next remedy mm-hmm. a next month. And a next remedy, it depends on how they respond to that first remedy. So if they respond well, it's not as though that remedy cures them. It gets them on the healing process.
Right, right.
But then you need to repeat the dose and then sometimes increase or decrease the potency. So if you're giving a placebo and you don't know it, you then think, well, that remedy didn't work, and then I have to use another remedy.
Right.
And you can go like that. But the process in homeopathy requires, you know, many months of treatment mm-hmm. and sometimes many years.
Yeah, it's a journey. But it really is a journey.
Yeah,
and it's a journey
it's
of like a delayering, you know, sort of peeling away the onion layers of the pathology and, you know, going through successive levels of recovery. It's a very interesting process. Yeah, so the question I would pose, though, is homeopathy compatible with the vast majority of Americans, who many of whom take prescription drugs? Does that necessarily neutralize
yes.
the efficacy? I mean, say you're taking heart and blood pressure medication and, medication for ulcerative colitis, for example. Would that overwhelm the subtle effects of the homeopathic remedy?
Let me say this. I see patients every day, and most of my patients I see via Skype or one of the video apps, or if necessary, even just a telephone. I then send them the homeopathic medicine, and I would say that at least half of my patients, maybe a little less, are on some conventional drug. And the limitation and the problem when they're on conventional drug is that I'm not able to see what their true symptoms are mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. they are masked.
Yeah.
But, you know, ultimately in homeopathy, you treat the person in front of you. You still use, you may not know their entire symptoms because the person's on a certain painkiller or a certain hormonal medicine or something else. But there's always different ways that professional homeopaths can see part of the picture of the patient to prescribe a remedy to begin to provide some benefit.
Indeed. Well, so homeopathic education service is a little bit of a misnomer because obviously you're educating the general public. You're not an MD, but you can advise people about selection of proper homeopathic remedies. So that's of interest, I think, to our listening audience. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, well, Homeopathic Educational Services, my company, is also a seller of hundreds of homeopathic books, thousands of homeopathic medicines, various e-courses and distance learning courses, and software. So we do provide a whole gamut of homeopathic everything. And
it's your one-stop shop for homeopathy.
It is. And because I can treat people, you know, literally anywhere in the world, that's really a great thing that computers have brought to homeopathy. I feel like Dr. Jetson, you know, even though there wasn't never a Dr. Jetson on that Jetson cartoon show.
Indeed. So homeopathic.com is the website. And tell us about your latest book. Is that out recently, and is that a good introduction?
Well, actually, my latest book was that book called The Homeopathic Revolution.
Okay.
Why Famous People and Cultural Heroes Chose Homeopathy. But you are right. Your instincts are good, Ron. I do have a newer book. But what this newer book is an e-book.
Okay.
And it's an e-book called Evidence-Based Homeopathic Family Medicine.
Oh, great.
And what this is a book that covers the treatment of 100 common diseases and what homeopaths do to treat them, along with references to, summaries of, and links to over 300 studies published in peer-reviewed journals. So if you, as a health professional, want to know what evidence is there on homeopathy and ADD, if you want to know about what homeopathy has for homeopathy and asthma, or whatever common ailment, you'd see the references to the research, you'd see the summary of the research, you'd see a link to the research, and then you'd see some of the homeopathic medicines that we recommend for that condition.
Wow. That's fabulous. And I know you've devoted your entire lifetime to the study and promulgation of homeopathy, and it's certainly been a brilliant career. And despite some speed bumps in terms of opposition, I think homeopathy is alive and well after talking to you today. So congratulations, and thanks very much for joining us, Dana Ullman.
Yeah, real pleasure to talk with you, Ron. You are a light in the world today, too.
Well, thank you so much for Mutual okay. Admiration Society. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As we age, forestalling and even reversing bone loss becomes more and more important. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Bone Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to ensure your skeletal health. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. In addition to the Bone Health Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links from my supplement starter kit, Heart Health Protocol, and much more. These new protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle, and for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.